Welcome to A Presence on Your Journey from Community Autism Resources. My name is Dennis Pulselli, and our guest today is Mr. Mike Cadoni, who's a specialized canine trainer. We'll go into more detail about exactly what he does. Mike, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so to get started, can you give us kind of a brief background of yourself?
Yeah, I've always had a love for dogs, and ever since I was a little kid, I would rather, if we went to a party and there were other kids or there were dogs, I'd be with the dogs. I just love playing with them and always wanted one, but growing up couldn't have one in the family. So as soon as I was able to, as soon as I got my own place, I got a dog and the training started there. I realized that it came easy to me and it was just the connection between me and the dog. So I had a pet. I had a pet for, 8 years, and I finally moved down to Florida and got on the fire department. And it was right after 9/11 that we started getting grants to help all departments have the equipment needed to help out in an emergency like that. So a lot of the city where I worked and a lot of the bigger departments picked up these grants, picked up the specialized truck called the heavy rescue truck, and became a member of a task force, which meant that we were part of three other different departments. Now, there weren't any canine teams, and that was something I was really interested in. So I just happened to call my chief and say, hey, I'm going to get a dog. How about we do this? And he said, give me some information. I think that's a great idea. So that's where it all started. I called a couple of breeders. I found one that was great with German Shepherds. And after I got the dog, the department hooked me up with a trainer. Now, I believe one of the questions that you had something to do with, I wasn't happy with the trainers.
The training school. Yeah, an article that I read mentioned the training school that you went to. But can I back up a minute and ask for people who may not be familiar?
Yeah.
Now, when you talk about a canine unit, because you mentioned that you did not have a canine unit, for people who may not be familiar, what would a canine unit do?
The canine units that you saw at the World Trade Center, those were the kind of dogs I trained.
So those would be like rescue dogs?
I'm sorry?
Those would be like rescue dogs?
They're called USAR dogs. So okay. USAR stands for Urban Search and Rescue.
Oh, okay.
Which, urban is city. Where it is compared to wilderness. So my dogs are trained to climb ladders, climb up, do things that other dogs wouldn't even think about doing. And the way you do that is to get them from a puppy and start them doing it. And once they do, you can't stop them. But, you also have to have the right dog. And I'm not saying a German Shepherd versus a Golden Retriever versus a Yellow Lab. What I'm saying is, I might want a German Shepherd rescue dog and to go to the breeder and say, this is the task he has to perform. Now, live human air scent, which is what my dogs are trained for. So you're alive, you could be buried 40 feet in the ground, but you're still letting off a scent. And that's what the dogs pick up on. There's a difference between a cadaver and a live victim. So they pick up on that. And, that's when they sit down and alert. When they find somebody, they get rewarded with a toy.
Oh.
So my dog, we could show up at a daycare center and have 100 kids trapped in there. My dog doesn't care. He doesn't care if there's 200 kids in there. All he knows is when he goes and finds them, he's going to get his toy. That's what he wants. Finding the person just gets him his toy. And that's what they work for. You pull that toy out and give it to them, and they only get it when they find somebody. So just imagine the excitement when they finally get that toy.
Were you fire department when you got into rescue dog training or what?
As far as the urban search and rescue, I was on the fire department, yes. My dog training started before that. I wasn't professional by any means, but I was able to teach the basics. And it's all in your energy. It's all in the way you present yourself to the dog. Some trainers are really harsh. So what I was getting to before, though, I'm sorry, with talking about picking the right dog, I mean, I had to go through three litters of dogs before she found one that would work for me because, people make the mistake. They want a pet and they go to work all day long. The dog's home. They come home and lay on the couch, let the dog out, and that's about all they do. Now, if you were to get a, not many people know what this is, but a Belgian Malinois, those are the dogs that went after Bin Laden and most of the police departments use them. They are a very, very high drive dog. So trying to find one that's not high drive is almost impossible. They're pretty much, some are just higher than the others. So what that dog is going to do is drive those people crazy, because he's going to want to play, train. And if you don't, that's when they get destructive. That's when, you know, you start having aggression issues. The dog's just pent up with too much energy. And that's why, you know, I like to have people come to me first and say, I'm looking for a dog, and what kind of dog do you think would work for me, before you go out and buy one and then try to fix it. Because sometimes if you're not going to exercise it, if you're not going to play with it, you're not going to fix it. It's as simple as that.
So if I'm understanding everything correctly, did you have to go to a school yourself to find a dog and to go through training, or?
No, I did it in pieces because I wanted to meet the different people, because I wanted to do this. I was hooked up with a master trainer, but he wasn't going to be with me forever, so I couldn't count on him to pick my dogs. So I went and met with the breeder. I became friendly with her, and I started hanging out with her on my days off once in a while, seeing how she tested the puppies. And some of the tests were kind of funny. I mean, one of her main tests was taking a brand new mop and pretending like she's mopping the clean floor, and all the puppies jump on the mop. And now she's dragging the puppies around, and puppies are, you know, they're playing tug with it. Well, some of them jump off, you know, the other one, a couple of more jump off. Now you got two left. And if you can keep on sweeping that floor and they don't let go, you put a marker on them, because we're looking at them right off the bat. Just that little test right there, them hanging on to that mop, shows a lot. Their drive, they're not going to let go, they're not going to give up.
So were you not happy with those particular techniques, and so you came up with your own, is that?
No, so I was very happy with the techniques. I got to be honest with you. I mean, they worked. My master trainer, he started his training in the Army during Vietnam. Mm-hmm. In the Marines during Vietnam. So he trained dogs for patrol in Vietnam. So you can only imagine, you know, how many dogs he had to produce. So I'm going to get into this, but there's positive reinforcement. And the positive reinforcement is, you know, the dog messes up, you take it around and do it again. There's no correction whatsoever. It's all positive, positive, positive. Well, that wasn't going to work in his situation. He needed to get those dogs done and out there. So he helped me train all three of my dogs for the FEMA test and got them all there. A dog is considered an adult and can take a test at 14 months. At 14 months, they're considered 21 years old in adult years. In 12 months, my dogs were ready. He had them ready. But, you know, it's not harsh. It wasn't really harsh. It's not hurting the dog. You don't ever hit the dog or anything like that. It's all corrections with a leash and the tone of your voice and correcting it as soon as a problem happens. After a couple of years, I went to school. It was a school based out of California. And when I got the curriculum, I looked at it. Now, you're talking 2 years of harsh training, and I see this, and it's all positive reinforcement. And I'm reading it, and I'm laughing, and I'm saying, this is never going to work. Well, you know, up until that point, I was training service dogs. I was training dogs that had a job to do. We had to get it done. And it wasn't like a service dog for a person. It was a service dog. He was a tool. You know, so we had to get him done, and he had to be obedient 100%, and we had to do it as quick as possible. So what I've found is you have to mix those two together. All right. So when a dog does something wrong, you want to have some means of correcting it. And that comes with leashes and collars and different tools. Like I said, nothing harmful to the dog, but it has to be corrected. And, you know, I've studied about as much as I can on dogs and started studying wolves and wolf packs. And a wolf pack, if you follow their rules, you've got a great house dog, a great family, just part of the family, knows where he is, knows where he belongs in the pack. But you know, when they mess up, they have to be corrected. And if you don't, that's when you run into problems. So you can say, oh my God, it's mean to correct them. It's mean to do this. But if you don't, and the dog thinks that's okay behavior, you're going to run into problems sooner or later, if not with you, with a friend or something.
So how did you come across, I think his name is Brock, the dog, Brock from Brooklyn, I think is, How did that come about?
Well, I got sick and wound up having to leave the fire department, and I had to bring my dog back, and I wound up moving back to Massachusetts, and I didn't have a dog. It was the first time I hadn't had a dog in a long time, especially, you know, this dog was with me 24/7. He was my partner, and I went into quite a depression. And between losing my job and losing my dog and trying to start over again, it was just, you know, it was a lot. So I started looking for dogs. Just one night I got on the pet finder thing and I saw this dog that I thought was, it said Italian Mastiff, and I had owned one of them before. And I said, oh, that's great. That's exactly what I want. So I call up and it just all worked out. And I called the girl that had him and had him and his sister. And she said, the male is already spoken for, but the female is here. And I said, okay, that's fine. And she said, well, they're coming to pick the male up at 4. You can come at 5. And I said, all right. So I get there at 5 and the male's, Brock's there. And I said, what happened? And she said, he didn't take to the family or didn't take to the little kid, but the female did. And I said, oh, all right. And I just recognized Brock's behavior. Thank God I knew what I was looking at, because immediately I knew he was high drive. I knew he needed exercise. So I said, I'll take him. So I got him home and I read his backstory. He had gone from a basement to a pen outside, and that was his walk back and forth every day. And that was it. I think he had to fight for his food. He just didn't have a very good life. And then for some reason, they gave him up. He was 24 hours from being put down. And, you know, I brought him home and I realized he had never been in a house, because he had no idea what a couch was, what a counter was. He was jumping all over everything. And I said, oh, this is going to be fun. So I got him at night. The next day I woke up and I lived on the beach. So I took him down the beach, and it was November. There was nobody down there. I said, what the heck? I let him off the leash and just said, go ahead. And he ran so far down that beach. Thank God there was a river at the end that split the beach, because I could barely see him. And he got down that river. I called him and he came running back to me, and just the look on his face, he had finally got to stretch his legs. And after that, we started training, and I hadn't trained for a couple of years. I lost everything. I didn't think I could train anymore. I had no confidence in myself. And this guy came along and completely changed all that. He learned everything that I wanted to teach him and more. I mean, if somebody is to call me up and say, can my dog do this? I'll say, give me a couple of days, I'll get back to you. Or if I know I can do it, yeah, but I'll take Brock. And if he and I can do it, your dog can do it. And he's about the best, because he'll do anything I tell him, especially for a toy. But, you know, once again, if I had brought him home and not known what a high drive dog is, he would have gone back to the shelter with a normal person. Because if you didn't take him out every day to run, he was just a mental case all over the house. Never sat down, just walked around and whined. And but take him out, play ball with him for a half an hour, come home, perfect.
Now, you train therapy and service dogs, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Did you have to get certified, or, and I know you were training urban rescue dogs and stuff like that, but was there some kind of a certification that you had to go through to work with service dogs and therapy dogs?
No. I mean, that's a real gray area. As far as a license to that, I'm a licensed dog trainer, which allows me to train dogs for whatever. You know, anybody can say, I train service dogs. And anybody can go online and buy a service dog vest and throw it on their dog that hasn't had a day of training and try to get it on a plane, and they probably will. It's what happens when you get on that plane. You know, the dog has to do what you say. It can't bark. It can't be out of control. It has to lay down at your feet. You know, there's just a lot that goes into it. So why I specialize in this is because I've done all this. I had to do it for FEMA. My dog's been on numerous planes. I've been on planes numerous times with dogs. that's the difference with me is you had asked in one of the questions, were my dogs certified by FEMA? No. What they are is I certify them through the FEMA curriculum. So every test that my dogs had to do, and you do not get any harder than this test. Obviously, it's FEMA. You know, they're not going to mess around. This is one of the hardest tests you can take, even just obedience-wise. That's what I base all my training on. I've got all the records from the past, and like I said, that's what I use. So if your dog passes this test, it's going to be ready to do whatever you need it to do. So there's difference between service dogs and therapy dogs, and it all depends on how far you want to go and what you want the dog to perform.
So what are the differences in training, say, a therapy dog and as opposed to a dog that performs specific tasks?
Okay. A therapy dog is more the kind of dog that a person is going to want to take to help other people, to go to a nursing home, to go to hospitals. Taking the dog out to make other people feel better is more of a therapy dog. It's when you get into the service work, now we're talking a specific task, and that's where it gets more involved. So as far as the therapy dog work goes, you know, you go through basic training, advanced training, and then, you know, real life training, and you're done. Whereas a service dog, you've got, you know, a list of things that we have to do. We go out for a day and we have to go to restaurants. You know, the dog has to lay under the table and not move. We get up and leave, go wash our hands, come back. The dog should still be there. Take the dog shopping with carts, pushing a grocery cart, you know, spend an hour in the grocery store, standing in line, sit, wait. The airport, my local airport, I hook up with them, take my clients up there, get the dogs on planes, and they take the dogs around just to get them used to that landing and taking off, one of the two crucial points to a dog when you're flying. We go to Boston, if that's something that the person's going to have to do. We get on buses, escalators, you know, confined spaces where there's people walking by and the dog just has to sit there and relax. There's a lot that goes into it to where as a therapy dog, he's basically going to be a pet that is going to be well-trained and be able to sit when you tell it to sit and have people pet it or jump on a bed if you tell it to jump on the bed and lay down so people can pet it. So the only difference between that is, like I said, the service dog performs one specific task, whereas the therapy dog performs different tasks, making different people happy for different reasons.
So, and I don't know if you already covered it and I may have missed it, but is there a specific method when you are training a dog that you use for training a dog to, say, get something for someone, open a door, or a specific task? Is there something?
Yes.
What would be your technique for doing that?
It's all depending on what it is. I can tell you, I had a guy that was deaf and needed a dog to alert him when the fire alarms went off. So what we do is take the dog outside where the fire alarm's not so loud, beep it, and call him. And as he's coming up to us, beep it again. Give him a piece of steak or chicken, something really good. Then we move that into the house, different rooms. Start beeping it, do the same thing. Now we get the guy up into his bedroom, in his bed, holding the fire alarm. He beeps it, and the dog's going to come running because he thinks he's going to get a piece of steak. And he's going to get a piece of steak every time we're training. But when the fire alarm goes off because the house is on fire, he's going to do the same thing. And that's how you just slowly, slowly build the dog up to it. If it's opening a door, that's simple. You just have one of my workers on the outside, you know, squeaking a toy or having a treat or something that dog wants to get out. And I'll have a rag tied to the door and give it to the dog. Help him pull it at first, and next thing you know, he's pulling it open, and after that, it's all him. It's all a matter of your energy and your love for the dog. I found that is huge. They know every dog that I have that, I deal with aggression issues, and those dogs don't like me very much, but the majority of the dogs that I deal with for service work love me, because I love them and they can tell my energy as soon as they walk in. I'm just happy to see them because they're usually really happy dogs and we have fun. And when you're dog training, it's all about fun. You can't be in a bad mood and dog train. It just won't work. So it's all positive energy. And once you establish that bond with the dog, dog will do anything for you.
When someone comes to you in need of a service dog or a therapy dog, is there some kind of a vetting process or something that you might go through to assist that person?
Yeah. So what I would do is we'll go with service because that's a lot easier to explain.
Okay.
If you need a service dog because you're having problems walking, you know, I had a lady that, I forget the disease, but she would get really dizzy really quick and she wouldn't be able to make it from the counter to the couch. So she needed a dog to get her there, to come over and have her put her hand on his back and walk her over to the couch. So when I first went, I asked what the condition is, what you need the dog for. That's going to determine the size. Then we go over what's your daily routine. Do you come home and jump on the couch? Do you come home and you're going to want to take the dog out? And then what is your weekend? Do you plan on taking off and leaving the dog? Do you plan on taking him with you? At some point, the dog needs to play, no matter what kind of dog it is. But size depends on what the condition is. And then everything else depends on your lifestyle. So if you've got the lifestyle where you love hiking and every weekend you're out in the woods and blah, 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 I'm not going to get you a Mastiff because he's going to last about, you know, 300 feet and he's going to lay down. That's going to be about it. You know, you're going to look for a dog that's going to want to run with you, going to want to go with you.
I wanted to talk to you also about your concerns with some of the regulations, the ADA regulations, and the importance of therapy dogs on planes and things like that. You know, get you to talk a little bit about why that's so important, because there seems to have been some changes in regulations. Obviously, blind persons with guide dogs are allowed and certain service animals, but there seems to have been some changes, and I wanted you to kind of go into that a little bit about the importance of therapy dogs in particular.
Okay, so with a therapy dog, with a therapy dog vest, you're not going to get into the airport. He's not going to get on a plane. You're not going to go into a restaurant because of that therapy dog patch on his vest. The service dog is where the problems start.
Okay.
And it's because people took advantage of that. I mean, there were stories of people bringing pigs and I heard an ostrich and, you know, bringing chickens. This is my service chicken. It's just like, what the? And then they're bringing dogs that aren't trained. So I can see where the airlines and everybody is up in arms. I can absolutely see that. And there's not much I or you or anybody else can do about it unless we come up with something like this, something like the FEMA test that the dog has to pass. And no, you cannot get on Amazon and order a service dog vest until you have this paperwork signed. That's what has to take place. There has to be some kind of regulations for these dogs to get on planes and to go everywhere with the person like they're supposed to. I mean, not just getting on planes, but that's is something as basic as healing, walking next to you properly. You know, that dog, by the time it leaves me, has to be walking next to you in a heel perfectly until you tell it to stop. And that means it's not sniffing, it's not looking at anybody, it's paying attention to you and doing its job. And that's it. If you don't have that and you got the dog swinging around looking at people, all it takes is a little kid to run up and grab it. And if he bites the little kid, well, there goes your dog. So it's very important that a service animal passes some kind of test like this, gets on a plane, gets on a bus, gets on an escalator. I mean, just an escalator alone can make you miss your plane if your dog's not going to get on it. And some dogs are petrified of it. Yeah. And the last thing you want to do is stress the dog out before you get on the plane. So you got to get them used to it before that. So a lot more goes into the service dog training than the therapy dog, because the therapy dog doesn't have to worry about that stuff.
I wanted to ask you, this is a podcast that's part of an autism support center. And I wanted to ask you about one of your employees, or your only employee, I think. His name is Elliot.
Yes.
Can you talk a bit about him and the kinds of jobs that he does as part of your business?
Yeah, so I met Elliot. I met Elliot's mom a while back with Brock because she lived right at the field I used to take him to. So she'd see us and she'd come out. We'd talk while I was playing with him. And she said, my son's autistic and I'd like to get him a service dog. And I said, oh, you know, great. And I said, are you going to be looking for training? And she said, yeah. And I said, all right. So she got the dog. We started training and he got into it. The dog would listen to him. Then they wound up getting another one and we trained that one. So Elliot's been with me long enough training dogs that he knows the basics. And what he's able to do for me is when I have somebody put a dog in a sit stay and we're going to introduce somebody walking up to him and petting him, I can't do it because the dog's going to listen to me. They're not going to move when I go up to him. It's when somebody else does. So I use him for that. While I'm talking to the people and trying to critique what they're doing, I'll have Elliot, you know, heel the dog back and forth, walk the dog so I can say, see where his shoulder is, that's where your leg should be, and we can all stand there and watch it. So he helps me quite a bit. We set up obstacle courses and, you know, take him down, and I pretty much take him to whatever dog I can. As long as it's not an aggressive dog, he's going with me.
We can't endorse businesses or products, particularly for-profit products and businesses, but we can give out information. So is there any contact information or whatever that you'd like to get with people who want to get in touch with you, who may be listening to this podcast?
Sure. My phone number is 774-454-5165. I have a website, specializedcaninetraining.com.
And I believe you have a Facebook page, too.
Yeah, there's a Facebook page. I'm working on that. So tell the people it's a little old, out of date, but it's going to come. And then my email is usarcanine1.
@gmail.com.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is there anything else that you think we should know about concerning your business and training, et cetera?
Yeah, just let me tell you a little bit. You know, I've talked to numerous people. I've talked to handicapped people that are looking for a service dog. I've talked to veterans. I had one friend who was a veteran who was looking for a dog. This guy was a firefighter with me and helped me. He got transferred to my station whenever he could to help me with the dogs. He just loved being with them. It was a lot of fun for him. He drove me crazy, but he was my friend. So I used to let him come out and hang out. He wound up going to Iraq. When he came back, he just didn't seem right, and we were trying to find him a dog. Well, everybody that I've talked to says the same thing. 2-year wait, $40,000. Now, if you wanted an urban search and rescue dog, you would be talking 15, 16 months worth of training, one-on-one with just me, and it's very involved. And yes, those dogs are worth $45,000. But when I'm training a service dog for a guy that is in Walmart and the lights flicker or the PA system makes a crazy sound that reminds him of something, instead of him freaking out, if he could just bend down and hug a dog, it takes it all away. I mean, Brock is my safety blanket. You know, I suffer from anxiety. I suffer from ADD. You know, life's not easy, but he makes it so much easier. It's just a comfort thing. And with me, there is no 2-year wait. There is no $40,000. The price depends on how far you want to go with it. But for, I mean, just the basic training alone, depending on where you live, is about $1,000. And that gets you through all the basics on leash, depending on the age of the dog, whether it's the through puppy training. And, you know, for 5 weeks, we're doing nothing but leash walking and learning all the basics. If you go with a puppy, we're teaching it not to bite, you know. But what I do is I teach you. So I've got a guy right now that I'm working with whose daughter is autistic, and he wants a dog and couldn't afford a dog from those other people. So that's what I offered him. I can do the same thing. It's just I'm going to show you how to do it, and you're going to have to follow through with the training. And that's why my prices are so low. I'm not spending every day with the dog training it. I wish I could, but, you know, I just don't have the facility or the time to train a dog for that long. And it seems this works out a lot better because, I mean, that poor lady that needed a service dog, her back was so bad, and she did everything. She waited the 2 years, she paid the money, and then they told her that she had to drive. It was ridiculous. It was about 100 miles one way to train this dog with them for the day and then turn around and drive back home. She said, I can't even sit on my couch for a half an hour. How am I going to drive all the way up there? Well, you know, that's where I come to you. Or you don't drive that far. We meet someplace or you come to me. I'm more into getting a dog paired with somebody than running a huge business where I have, you know, 40 dogs. I would rather work one-on-one with people and see that bond being built. And that way I can correct anything. I mean, if I train a dog for you and give it to you, you might run into something and not know what to do. And now, you know, we're back to training again after you just spent all that money. So it just works out a lot easier if you take part in it from the beginning. And plus that dog builds that bond with you. You know, if you've got somebody else training it for 2 years, it's going to build a bond with that person.
And how many years have you been doing this business?
25.
Okay.
Seems like 125.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for, this has been very interesting. And thank you so much for taking time to talk about your business and yourself. And I hope that people will take advantage from listening to this podcast. I just want to remind everyone that Presence on Your Journey is a podcast of Community Autism Resources. Barbara Domain is our executive director. Nick Domain is our executive producer. You can hear this podcast anytime by going to our website, which is www.community-autism-resources.com. Or you can get this podcast on any devices. Just ask for your device to play Community Autism Resources, A Presence on Your Journey, or any podcast in which you may hear other podcasts. And this is Dennis Pulselli thanking you and saying goodbye for now.